Visit us online at investinvermont.org. That's investinvermont.org.
Hi, folks. This is Jerry Booth. In 1946, when my family started Booth Brothers Dairy, they knew the farmers and where their milk came from. In today's world, everyone is concerned about where their food supply comes from. At Booth Brothers, it's the same as it was in 1946. 27 local farm families who supply us with quality milk, produced right here in central Vermont. So ask yourself, do you know where your milk comes from? Remember, the next time you're in the dairy aisle, reach for Booth Brothers.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Nice day out there today. Thanks for spending part of it with us. Quite chilly out there. Make sure you bundle up. It is going to be a cold one. Forecaster Roger Hill is predicting even colder weather coming up tonight. Thanks for joining us on the program this morning. It was a beautiful sunrise out there today. I hope you get an opportunity to catch that. Coming up today on the program, we're going to be talking about actually a couple of different beverages here on the program. In our second hour this morning, we're going to head down to southern Vermont and find out about an organic vineyard that has been quite productive down in that neck of the woods. We're going to spend our first part of the program here talking about the idea of taxing sugar-sweetened beverages. And we would love to hear from you on the program. You can reach us this morning at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with the head of the Department of Public Service. One of the issues that we'll talk with Chris Recchi about is what is going on with Fairpoint Communications and what the state is doing to help customers, folks like you that might have been having some difficulty with your service, phone and internet. Again, we'll take your calls this morning, and you can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We begin this morning. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Anthony Iripino, who is with the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. This is a group, an umbrella group that's been working with a number of other organizations on this idea of taxing sugar-sweetened beverages. Anthony, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Mark. Thank you for having me.
In a previous life, you were with the Conservation Law Foundation. I'm very interested to know why you switched to this group, in particular, Conservation Law Foundation, very active on Lake Champlain issues, and it really looks like this might actually finally be the year.
Yeah, Mark, you know, I always thought of my career in environmental law about making Vermont a healthier place for the people that live here. And so this seemed like a natural transition to work more directly on public health issues and improving the lives of Vermonters. But there really is a similarity between the problems that it's trying to solve. I mean, with the lake, we know that we're putting too much pollution in the lake, and we can see that it's making the water body unhealthy, and it's risking the health of the people who live by that lake and try to recreate it and enjoy it for fishing and other things. When we talk about our own bodies, when we talk about physical health, we know that we're putting too much sugar in the American diet, and that sugary drinks are the largest source of added sugars in our diet. And that has all sorts of dire consequences, both for our physical health and for our fiscal health as it relates to the amount of money that we're spending trying to treat preventable illnesses.
It's pretty amazing when you hear the numbers of how much of this stuff we drink on an average basis.
You know, Mark, it's really surprising that the amount of sugary drink consumption in the United States has gone up 500% in the last 50 years. And that's really correlated strongly with the rise of obesity as an epidemic in Vermont, the rise of preventable illnesses related to obesity, and the amount of money that we're spending on trying to treat those. There's a group of scientific researchers that have determined that approximately one-fifth of all the weight gain in the United States since the 1970s is attributable to liquid sugar. And you know, I think what people don't realize what's different about sugary drinks, people don't realize how much sugar is in there. They don't realize that we're literally drinking dessert all day long. one of the things that we've tried to do in our campaign, try and help educate people about that. Probably Vermonters who've been to the doctor or the dentist might have seen our poster. And if they want to get a look at it, they can go to our website, healthiervt.org. We've taken some of the typical sugary drinks that people are drinking on a daily basis, Mountain Dew, Gatorade, vitamin water, so-called energy drinks. And one of the things that's really misleading about what the industry does is the nutrition labels say how many grams of sugar as in these drinks. But most people don't think in grams. They think in teaspoons. They think in sugar cubes that they might add to their coffee or something. So we've actually visualized that. And when you see the pyramid of sugar cubes in front of a Sunkist or a Mountain Dew, it's really staggering. You'd never give your kid that much, you know, raw sugar. You'd never put that much raw sugar in your coffee. And yet, people are having 3, 4, 5 of these drinks a day, and it's really affecting our health, particularly of children, in a really negative way.
So it's 16 teaspoons in a 20-ounce drink.
It's really amazing. That's a lot of sugar. And what I should point out is that the American Heart Association, which is a lead member of our coalition, they have a recommendation which is generated by some of the leading nutritionists and public health experts in the country, that men should consume no more than 9 teaspoons of sugar a day, women 6 teaspoons of sugar a day, added sugar in your diet, and much less for children. And you think about one single serving sugary drink, you're getting more than twice the recommended dosage of sugar on a daily basis.
What is so particularly bad about this kind of sugar, as opposed to, sugar from fruit or anything else?
That's a great question, because if you think about it, there's actually 18 grams of sugar in an apple. But, with an apple, you're also getting other nutritious things that your body needs, like fiber. And that fiber also plays a role in how the body processes sugar. It's slowing down the delivery of sugar to the organs that are really the plumbing of the body, your liver, your pancreas, the things that filter out all the unhealthy ingredients in what we eat. Whereas when you drink sugar, there's nothing to slow down that process. It's like jet fuel for the obesity epidemic, because it's really pumping more sugar than the organs can handle into those organs at one time. And so they're not able to filter it all out and process it effectively. And the result is that sugar builds up in your arteries, contributing to heart disease. It diminishes the ability of the liver to function properly, leading to fatty liver disease, all sorts of things that have really dire consequences for people's health.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. We're talking with Anthony Arapino. He's with the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. Let's go to Colchester. Hi, Ross. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good. I have a quick question for you. Commercial leading up to the show this morning was about milk, a local producer. Got me thinking about how taxing sugary drinks might influence folks' choices on beverages. I was wondering if there's any evidence that's showing that taxing sugary beverages will perhaps support local economies, local industries, things like milk. Will Vermonters' choices be going towards something more of milk rather than a soda? Is there any evidence for that?
All right.
Thanks for the call, Ross. You bring up a really important point. The tax that we're proposing, first of all, is modeled on the success of the tobacco tax. But what we've seen in the nation of Mexico, our neighbors to the south, which is a country with very high rates of obesity and also very high per capita consumption levels of sugary drinks, they just instituted a tax, which is the somewhat equivalent of what we're proposing, 2 cents per ounce excise tax. And they are seeing very positive results for public health, but also the kind of results that suggest a potential win-win for our local agricultural economy. They're seeing that the sales of sugary drinks are decreasing by about 10%. And they're seeing sales of plain water and milk products, which are not taxed, increasing by roughly the same amount. So there really is an opportunity with this tax to help consumers make healthier choices, to level the playing field for healthier drink choices like milk. And that's a potential benefit for our local economy as well as public health. On top of that, this isn't just a proposal to raise a tax here. We think in order to do the most good for the preventable illnesses and the obesity epidemic, we've got to allow our neighbors most in need to get more access to fresh fruits and vegetables, including those that are produced by a local farm economy. And so one of the things that our alliance proposes doing with the approximately $35 million in new revenue that this tax could raise is taking existing programs like school nutrition programs, farm-to-school programs, programs that are allowing low-income Vermonters to access our farmers markets with vouchers so that their purchasing dollars go farther when getting more fresh fruits and vegetables into their households. That's one of the things we want to do with the revenue we raise. So we think there is really a double benefit here, both in terms of in the store, helping level the playing field for healthier alternatives like milk, like water, like unsweetened teas, but also using some of the money that's raised when people do buy sugary drinks, and we anticipate that people will continue to buy sugary drinks, using that money to invest in programs that benefit nutrition and that can help our local farm economy as well.
Let's go to Montpelier. Andrew, good morning.
Hello, Mark. Andrew McLean here. I do lobbying work in Montpelier representing the beverage distributors, and I was wondering if I could talk a little bit about the other side of this discussion. I noticed a couple of statistics that were mentioned here earlier, and I'm a little concerned by the impression that they're leaving. Is that possible?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. You know, as I said, we represent the local distributors, the non-alcoholic distributors, which are the Coca-Cola and Pepsi, but they're the local distributors. A couple of things that Anthony mentioned, I'm a little concerned about. One was that soda is the largest contributor of sugar in our bodies. In fact, soda represents, or drinks, beverages represent a third, and other foods represent two thirds of the sugar that are put into your bodies. And it seems to me kind of interesting in that the beverage industry is trying to do several things to try to reduce that amount of sugar. They've entered into several programs with the American Heart Association and the Clinton Foundation, an Alliance for a Healthier Generation, which trying to do a couple of things. One is to reduce the amount of calories that are consumed in beverages per capita by a significant amount by 2025. And you're seeing some of that if you're looking in your grocery stores now. You're looking at products that are, 8-ounce containers. You're looking at more, many different offerings that are offered that are low and no calorie beverages. You're looking at also, there's clear on calories proposal that's on some of the containers, which are state exactly the number of calories that are in each of the containers. That program is going to be expanded to include that same information on vending machines as well as fountain machine. Also, that we're looking at information that would direct to mothers, families, children through social media and other things, which kind of like a fitness pal, which would specify the amount you eat, the amount you drink, the activity that you do, and then that would come out to a healthy lifestyle. I think taxes aren't the answer. We've through some small grassroots operations that we've had, we've come up with hundreds of businesses that oppose this tax. Thousands of individuals, thousands of Vermonters over the last couple of months have signed petitions against the tax. You're looking at a proposal that I think penalizes one industry and doesn't look at the rest of the equation. Calories, you know, and beverages have gone down over the last 10 years significantly. Added fats have gone up. If you look at this tax proposal, it wouldn't even, the triggering mechanism wouldn't count the naturally occurring fruit drinks, which have just as much sugar as some of the sugar sweetened beverages.
We've got a lot of points here, Mark, that I'd love to respond to.
Okay, I will give you an opportunity, believe me. So I'm hearing, Andrew, reduction of calories, there's going to be more education programs.
Mm-hmm.
And you claim that the hold on, Andrew. And you've also talked about the idea that the actual consumption of calories has decreased. I'm going to have Anthony comment on those, and thank you for your call.
So, first of all, I think this is an important point because the industry can innovate. We know from their announcement this summer that Andrew referred to, this voluntary commitment to lower calories over 10 years. This isn't the first voluntary, unenforceable commitment we've had from the industry. But when you look at the press around this announcement, you look at the Washington Post, for example, their headline was Coke and Pepsi concede maybe soda is bad for you. I mean, most industry watchers viewed this as an admission, okay, that they are contributing to the problem. However, they can contribute to the solution by innovating their products. 10 years is not going to get us where we need to be for public health. He's talking about also a lot of educational efforts. And I think it's important because education does play a role in this problem. And the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont is very committed to educating people about how much sugar is in our drinks and how those sugary drinks affect our health in negative ways. But what we're up against is the nearly $866 million that the clients Andy represents. And it's not just local distributors, let's be clear. He's a lobbyist for the American Beverages Association. That's Coke, that's Pepsi, that's Diet, that's Snapple, Dr. Pepper. And they spent close to $1 million last time to oppose this tax. They've spent millions of dollars to oppose proposals like this, most recently in Berkeley, California, where the, where the citizens did pass this tax despite the nearly $2 million that Andy's clients spent trying to defeat local efforts there. But they're spending $866 million a year in advertising and marketing, trying to get us to drink more of these products. And if your listeners go to a website called sugarydrinksfacts.org, they can read a report about the efforts. While at the same time they're out there making these feel-good voluntary commitments, they're still marketing these products to children. And we know that the level of sugar in a lot of these drinks is entirely inappropriate to children, and it is affecting their health in very negative ways.
What about his point, though, that taxing it is not the way that you get people to change their behavior?
We know that a tax, an excise tax on unhealthy products, can work. And we know that because we've seen that success with the tobacco tax here in Vermont. It has been very effective at both cutting youth smoking, particularly because kids are some of the most price-sensitive consumers. Young people are some of the most price-sensitive consumers. So we know that a tax can work both to reduce the amount of consumption and also to raise money for the type of education programs that can work, and also for the type of nutrition programs, the type of physical activity programs. We know there's no silver bullet solution to this. That's why it's important not just to look at leveling the playing field for healthier alternatives, but also investing some of the money that the tax raises to benefit other types of programs that can really make a difference in the health and the lives of Vermonters.
What about Andy's argument that it's singling out one industry, one part of the sugar equation that we all have?
I think that you really have to come back to, as a category, okay, Andy said food and beverage, but these sugary drinks are the largest source of added sugars in our diet. In addition, okay, one of the difficulties with the sugar in our drinks is the serving, the amount of sugar that you're ingesting in one serving. you can compare sugary drinks to don't. We've done this comparison. You compare it to donuts, Hershey's bars. You are getting more sugar in a Mountain Dew than you are in most anything else you eat. And people just don't realize it. When you eat food, okay, you're getting some level of satiation, satisfaction. And you understand that you've ingested what you've ingested. When you're drinking your calories and your liquid sugar, it's almost all sugar, no nutrition. And that is why, you know, the public health research community has concluded that sugary drinks are really a leading cause in the obesity epidemic.
Let's go to California. Beth, good morning.
Hey, good morning from California. I actually live in Newport, Vermont. And I just learned about your radio show, thanks. It's a fascinating subject, and I really just have a comment. In Newport in the Northeast Kingdom, there's a real groundswell in the to move toward increased access to healthy food, local food for everyone. We're a great community working for the community, and I just wanted to say that we'd gladly welcome any of your efforts from the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont in the Kingdom. We need help. And sometimes we feel like we're far away from what's happening. So I just wanted to put a plug in. Say, keep up the great work. We're extremely interested in the obesity epidemic. And I just wanted to say thanks for everything you're doing.
Appreciate your support, Beth. Yeah, definitely it's very important to understand that some of the areas of the state where we have the highest incidence of obesity, we also have real problems with low-income people being able to access healthy foods. And we think that farm-to-school programs, subsidized CSA shares, and access to farmers market present a real opportunity. A small investment of state money there can go a really long way in giving our neighbors most in need an opportunity to participate in this fantastic local food revolution we have going on in the state right now.
Can you explain
that's
to me?
Very, very encouraging, and we do have some exciting things that are happening and that are starting to happen, so you've been warned. I'm going to let you know about all of them.
Great.
Okay, good. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Anthony, I'm still not clear here. Why is this so much more a problem today than 30 years ago?
I mean, one of the statistics I said before, if you look at the increase in sugary drink consumption, that's, you know, 500% increase in the last 50 years.
Per person, nationwide, what's that number?
That's a nationwide consumption figure, but the average American consumes 46 gallons of sugary drinks per year. I mean, that's a staggering amount of liquid sugar. And, you know, one of the problems here is that in terms of, you know, there's this question about should the government be involved in setting the price of sugary drinks with a tax on them? And the reality is the government's already involved. Part of the problem is the federal government, the corrupt Congress in Washington, at the behest of the lobbyists for the soda companies, for the GMO corn companies, they have subsidized pork barrel subsidies for corn growers to make high fructose corn syrup so cheap and so widely available in our economy. And so the sad fact is in a lot of stores in Vermont, you can get a Mountain Dew for cheaper than you can get an apple that's grown right here in Vermont because of the subsidies and because of the wasteful spending out of Congress in Washington. We're asking our local politicians to get involved and to level the playing field for healthier beverage alternatives.
Let's go to Burlington. Dave, good morning.
Hi there.
How's it going? This is Root. Is this Root Beer Dave?
Yes, this is Root Beer Dave.
Okay. How are you?
Good. This tax would be an absolute first way that we would be run right out of business without any control ourselves. This tax would take 25% that's left over after we pay our distributor, we pay our income taxes, we pay the cost of our high-quality ingredients. We would be left with 25 cents as we are now. With this tax, that would take every single bit of our profit and put us out of business.
It's So this is Dave from Rookie's Root Beer, and I'm sorry to hear that you still feel that way, because I've had the chance to visit Dave's operation. I actually enjoy his product as a treat now and then at Three Penny Tap Room and other fine places where it's served. But you know, we've run Dave's concern by the Vermont Tax Department, and unfortunately, I just think he misunderstands how it works, because this is not a tax. This is a tax that would be paid at the wholesale level by the big distributors that distribute not just local products like Rookies, but, you know, the Mountain Dews, the Monster Energy drinks. And as a result of that, you know, you've got an opportunity that this is a tax that the distributor pays and asks the retailer, the person who's selling directly to the customer, to add that to the price of the drink, and it recoups in the sale, that price is recouped. So if you think about a 12-ounce drink that's being served, as most of, you know, these local products are, in a restaurant setting, we're talking about adding a quarter to the price of that drink. And I think most people who are out for like a $30, $40 dinner at Flatbread in Burlington, they can afford that extra quarter, and it's not likely to make a difference to them when they're buying a niche specialty product like a $3 glass of root beer. But when we're talking about the convenience store setting, when you got a bunch of kids going in after school, who are, you know, thinking about what to do and what, you know, they want to get some drinks to play video games or whatever. I mean, that price difference there in that setting with the price-sensitive youth consumers, or somebody who has a heavy habit and they're drinking 3, 4, 5 of these a day, that's where that tax can really start to add up and change behaviors and encourage people to go to more healthier behaviors. We don't think at the premium product level, the high-end consumers are really going to be affected, especially when that tax is going to be paid by the distributors and not the local manufacturers.
You buying that, Dave?
No, I just think we're being targeted as a single food in this whole fight against sugar, and I can't see it. I really can't.
Well, what about this idea that it would be taxed at the retail level and supposedly not get down to you, and that you could just pass it along?
I don't like the idea of passing it along like that. I just don't agree with the tax altogether. And I think that there's a lot more room for education and things like that at the parental level. Don't let your kids drink all that soda. You know, that's a matter of parenting. Moderation is absolutely key. And my wife recently, over the past 2 years, has lost 80 pounds. she's extremely healthy, and she's immersed in the soda culture right here every single day. And through her correct choices, she has begun to have a healthier life.
Well, I lost a couple of pounds when you stopped making those brownies.
That's why we don't make them anymore.
All right, let me have, thank you for your call, Dave, and let me have Anthony respond. I appreciate it.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Dave is making a premium product. He's selling root beer for over $3 a mug, and, you know, that's not... His product is a treat. It's a special occasion drink. It's not the 4, 5, 6 a day habit. He doesn't sell a single serving like the big soda companies do. And that's really where we think the problem is, and that's where we think the solution lies. We think, you know, the multinational corporations that are selling the bulk of the sugary drinks that are consumed in Vermont, their profits will be... We don't really care about their profits. They're profitable enough, but we think they have an opportunity, as Andy said, to innovate, to offer healthier products that are not affecting the lives of consumers and not also creating really expensive healthcare problems for our state to solve. I mean,
but if I'm Dave, I'm hearing this proposal and I'm saying to myself, well, you know, parents shouldn't let their kids have 3 or 4 of these a day. And what about the ice cream guy? What about the cookie guy? Why is Anthony picking on me? Is what I would be thinking.
Yeah, and again, I mean, people understand, though, that ice cream and cookies are treats that you have at dessert. The problem with the sugary drinks is that's hidden sugar. They don't understand how much sugar they're getting. And there's a reason for that confusion, because the marketing, the hundreds of millions of dollars spent each year by the manufacturers to get people to drink more and more of these products. One example, vitamin water, okay? That sounds like a really healthy product. But right now, Coca-Cola is embroiled in a number of consumer protection lawsuits where they're being accused, and the plaintiffs are winning, of misleading advertising, because they make all sorts of health claims about how these are good for you. A lot of the drinks we're talking about, we're not just talking about soda, too. That's an important thing to understand. We're talking about fruit, quote-unquote, fruit punches, and fruit juice cocktails, things that sound healthy if you're a parent, your kid, but when you actually look, there's very little real fruit juice in them. What there is a lot of is high fructose corn syrup or cane juice, which is another, you know, euphemism for liquid sugar. So, you know, it's really hard when you've got an industry with so much money that's willing to engage in misleading advertising. It's really hard to know what the healthy choice is doing. But one of the other things I want to go back to in terms of the example in Mexico, okay, one of the survey results they found from looking at the attitudes of the Mexican population after the tax went into effect is there's an increase in awareness about how these things really should be treated more as a treat, as a dessert, as a party item, rather than a daily habit. And so the tax itself is an education tool.
What about Diet Coke? What about Diet Pepsi? Aspartame? Some people say that's, you know, that's like poison. It's worse than anything else you could be putting in your body. Would that be taxed on this or not?
In our proposal, it would not be. And the reason why is there are a lot of things that some people say. What we try to do with the American Heart Association, the American Cancer Society, the Vermont Medical Society, these are members of our coalition. These are science-based organizations. We are looking at every peer-reviewed study that's coming out on the health effects of different drinks. What is absolutely 100% clear is that sugary drinks have been a major contributor to the obesity epidemic, to type 2 diabetes, to heart disease, to some forms of cancer related to obesity, to tooth decay. One really sad statistic that I've come across doing this work is that Vermont is spending $2.5 million a year to treat children in hospital settings who have to have teeth extracted. And when you're a young child having teeth taken out because your tooth decay is so bad, I mean, sugary drinks is one of the things that the researchers tell us is really where we have to focus.
Okay, what about the aspartame question?
Oh, yeah, so the point I was making is that we are a science-based organization, and that the current position is, looking at the obesity epidemic and all those related diseases, diet sodas are not contributing to that problem definitively. We're open to continuing to look at the science as that evolves, and that's something that, you know, legislators have mentioned as well and can be part of the legislative debate. So let's have that debate. But what's 100% established and clear in the scientific research community is that the sugar added drinks with that much added sugar are making us sick, and that's those sicknesses are costing the state hundreds of millions of dollars each year.
Let's go to Washington. Andrew, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Anthony, you've touched on this a couple times. It seems to me that the bigger problem in every beverage that you're talking about are, in fact, those that are sweetened with high fructose corn syrup, as opposed to those being sweetened with sucrose. And you've mentioned Mexico a few times. If I'm not mistaken, in Mexico, doesn't Coca-Cola use sucrose to sweeten their product there?
You're definitely correct in that they do use more often sucrose in Mexico. However, it's not really made a difference in Mexico to the epidemic of type 2 diabetes, to the epidemic of heart disease. So even in a country where most of the sugary drinks are sweetened with other forms of sugar other than high fructose corn syrup, we're still seeing very negative health effects as a result of the high levels of sugary drink consumption there. So yes, high fructose corn syrup, which is the dominant sweetener in the American drink market, is a problem, but it doesn't mean that we can let other forms of liquid sugar off the hook.
244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Burlington. Matt, good morning.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, I'm Mark and Anthony. Just had a question. Listening to this, you know, we live in a state where, you know, living costs are high. Obviously, you go to the grocery store. Some things are already pretty expensive, and I don't drink a lot of soda, but I drink some soda sometimes, and I'm wondering why I should be forced to pay an extra tax on soda when, you know, it's not the single contributor to obesity. And I think this kind of oversimplifies the all the things that go into making that perfect storm of obesity as a condition. I mean, where's the talk of exercise? I'm sure that, you know, as soda consumption or sugary drink consumption has gone up over the last 50 years, as Anthony said, what about physical activity levels, especially with children? I mean, wouldn't a tax on video games or television be just as effective?
I think the important point that Matt is making here, and the area that where we agree, is that there's really no silver bullet in terms of the obesity epidemic. We're starting with sugary drinks because we know that they've been a lead contributor, and we know that they're the largest single category source of added sugars in our diet. However, getting more exercise, getting more opportunities for people to access local nutritious foods, those are important, and we're not investing enough as a state in those, and that is really coming back to hurt us. We believe at our campaign that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so one of the things that's really important about our proposal is that we invest some of the money that the tax would raise to encourage more nutritious, to make more nutritious foods accessible, and to create opportunities, grant programs to communities where their citizens want more opportunities for physical activity. They want more bike paths. They want more walkable communities. And we're not investing enough in that. So that the tax is one way to get at some of these other issues and to encourage the kind of investment that we'd like to see to help Vermonters live a healthier life. And this affects us all. This is one thing that people really need to understand. We have a physical health crisis in the state of Vermont, but we also have a fiscal crisis, both with our state budget and with our economy as a whole. We're spending almost $200 million a year on treating preventable diseases related to obesity and poor diet issues. More than $50 million of that is in Medicaid, which is where we have a big deficit, part of our state deficit this year. So we've got to get new revenue in the system, and that revenue, if we invest wisely in things that promote wellness and promote physical activity and better health, that can help save the state, all of us, and our businesses money over the long term.
Quick break. We'll come back, continue our discussion with Anthony Iorupino of the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. We're talking about a proposal for a sweetened beverage tax back after this.
Attention all former military personnel. Since 2004, Lamoille Valley Ford has proudly provided free scheduled maintenance to all active military, National Guard, and Reserve as our way of saying thanks. And in each quarter of this year, Lamoille Valley Ford will continue to recognize some of our hometown heroes. That said, the first group of hometown heroes Lamoille Valley Ford would like to honor are the many men and women who previously served for any length of time in our armed forces. Your past sacrifices to our great country allow us to enjoy the freedoms we have today, and all of us at Lamoille Valley Ford salute you and say a big thanks. So through the end of March, no matter what brand vehicle you drive or where you bought it, Lamoille Valley Ford will provide you with your next oil change, tire rotation, state inspection, brake inspection, and more at no cost to you and with no strings attached. Call today for an appointment or drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Hardwick and Lamoille Valley Ford. At Lamoille Valley Ford, we know our country's military matters.
Are you ready to pay a new $1.35 per gallon tax on gasoline? Well, a coalition of 15 progressive groups led by VPERG is calling for Vermont to pass a $250 million per year carbon tax on things like gas and home heating fuel. What do you think? Good idea or bad idea? Learn more about this and who's behind it, and make your voice heard by signing the Vermont Carbon Tax Survey at ethanallen.org. Again, that's ethanallen.org. Paid for by the Ethan Allen Institute.
There's a four-letter word that's part of everyone's language. In fact, it's a word that everyone loves to use. That four-letter word is sale. And when it comes to sales, no one does it quite like Novello Furniture on the Berrymont Pillier Road. Their January clearance sale is going on now till Monday, January 19th at 5:30 p.m. You'll be able to save up to 70% off list on Novello's incredible selection of quality furniture and accessories. Recliners, living room and bedroom sets, dining room furniture, desks, lamps, tables, and bedding. Now is the time to get that one-of-a-kind chair in trendy fabrics. The list goes on and on. In fact, Novello Furniture has a new Lazy Boy gallery, and it's all marked down. And Sealy Posturepedic mattresses are lower than ever before. Now, what was that four-letter word? Sale. At Novello Furniture. Hurry in. Sale ends January 19th. Novello Furniture on the Barry Montpelier Road. Better furniture for less.
I'm Tracy Towers. I've been a dental hygienist in Vermont for 24 years. I believe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure because I've seen firsthand the destruction that sugary drinks cause. Toddlers come into the office with soda-filled sippy cups. Teenagers are hooked on sugary sports drinks, and adults consume cases of soda per month. Despite our best efforts at educating our patients, there seems to be no decrease in consumption. Making the healthier choice the easier choice by taxing sugary drinks can help. Learn more at healthiervt.org.
All right, Matt, continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning with Anthony Iorapino. He's with the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. They want to propose a excise tax on sugar sweetened beverages. Let's head over to Huntington. Rich, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm not necessarily opposed to what you're proposing here, because I really consider, especially the high fructose corn syrup, is absolute poison to children, rocket fuel. I think as long as you're proposing the idea of the government getting involved in affecting the availability and pricing of these products, to me the absolute no-brainer to start with is to stop the government from giving massive amounts of this stuff away for free. And we do that every day in the form of Vermont's, used to be called food stamps, now Three Squares Vermont program. The first thing I would do is to knock all of these products off the eligibility list for food stamps so that, I mean, we're giving away for free. So what kind of a message is that sending?
All right. What do you think about that idea, Anthony?
You know, I think one of the concerns that our coalition has is we're not about limiting people's choice, okay? We're about encouraging them to make healthier choices. And anything that deprives people of the choice of you know, what they choose to buy at the grocery store, we just can't get behind. What we can do, I think, is increase the price of those items so that it is a less attractive choice for consumers. And also, there's no reason to believe that, you know, this is just a problem with low-income people. One of the people who's a spokesperson for our campaign, who's had a dramatic weight loss in his own life, is a business owner in Vermont who really was drinking six of these a day and was able to really lose weight by switching. He actually switched to diet products. So, you know, we don't really want to single out low-income people, and we don't want to deprive anyone of the choice. We just want to encourage people to make healthier choices.
I brought this up with a couple of people on Friday on my show down at the legislature, Anthony, including the governor and the speaker. And the criticism I heard from both of them, there was a concern about owners of stores on the borders. There was also this idea of having a tax that presumably will go down, and depending on that, as a revenue source, and two concerns that they raised. Neither one of them seemed all that interested in this.
You know, I think the good thing for us is that we have a number of champions in the legislature, and that particularly the situation with the budget gap is bringing a lot of interest to our issue. But also, that interest is coming from members of the legislature who understand how much we are spending on treating preventable illnesses in Vermont that are related to obesity, and how we've got to get a handle on that. One of the things that you mentioned was this border issue. And, you know, this is the same sky is going to fall argument we heard the last time there was a major increase in the tobacco tax. People said, all of a sudden, all these border businesses are going to go out of business because people are going to drive across the border to get their cigarettes. And, you know, there's still plenty of convenience stores and gas stations along the Vermont side of the border. In fact, a UVM professor, Jane Kolodinsky, studied this very carefully. because it was exactly the same argument that we saw with the tobacco tax. And let's not forget, there's a reason that these stores are called convenience stores, okay? Let's give consumers a little more credit. When you're thirsty, it doesn't make sense to burn time and gas. It's not convenient, nor is it cost effective to keep driving across the border when you're thirsty. When you walk into a store thirsty and you see that the Mountain Dew that you want costs 40 cents more than you want to pay for it, you just look down the beverage case and you look for a healthier option. Either that or you just suck it up and pay the tax. But we think there's a real opportunity, just as there is for the industry, to innovate and offer more healthier products. We think there's an opportunity for our local stores to offer more healthier beverage choices.
What about depending on a revenue source that you want to go down?
Well, I think that is a great problem to have. I mean, if that first of all shows that the governor and the speaker believe and understand that this tax could be successful in encouraging Vermonters to make healthier choices. And for both of those leaders who really understand how little extra money there is in the system and how we can't afford to continue spending hundreds of millions of dollars to treat diseases that are preventable, particularly when we have kids developing health conditions that once were only affecting adults and then costing the system money as they grow old with these health problems. I think that would be a nice problem to have when we have this task, when it's succeeding in both driving people to healthier choices. And if that is the case, we are going to see less spending in the healthcare system for preventable illnesses over time. That's a good result for Vermont. And I think, let's deal with that problem when we have it. The problem that's in front of the governor and in front of the speaker right now is that they've been cutting into social programs for years. And we've got so many holes in our social safety net, we've got to bring new revenue into the system, and we've got to help Vermonters live healthier lives. So I think, this notion of a declining revenue source, that's not the problem we're facing today. Let's solve today's problem today and make a plan for the future.
I'm going to take a moment of your time to remind you about our good friends at Jamison Insurance. If you're looking for a great family-run company in the insurance business, you may not need insurance today. There may come a day that you do. Maybe you're looking for a new vehicle these days. Maybe you're looking at a new home, and you want to make sure both of those are covered. If you'd like to have the folks at Jamison Insurance review the policies that you already have, they'd be happy to do that. If you own a business, John Jamison will come to your place of business. And if you're just, somebody like you or me, and you want to have them review your auto or homeowner's policies, they're happy to do that for you over the phone. Either way, you can call the following phone number at 496-2080, and you can get a lot more information about this company online at jamisoninsurance.com. Let's head to Montpelier. Dave, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mark. Morning, Anthony. Great show. This is pointing up a kind of a larger issue about the ability of government to make social policy changes, not just through the tax code, but through regulation as well. And it seems to go back to, probably before the Civil War. Government, not government per se, but people and culture expressing through government demanded action against something that was seen as detrimental to posterity and the culture as a whole. From slavery, through tobacco, through leaded gas, there's always been very powerful interests who know what the health risks are, and yet use their financial clout to impede healthy social outcomes, which the majority of the public do in fact agree with. There was no argument against Walter Reed draining malaria swamps. There was no argument against polio, or there's somebody who said, the government shouldn't be in the business of funding polio research, or rickets. It seems to me that's the larger discussion that we should be having out front, is government, does government have a legitimate role in basically protecting us, not so much just from ourselves, but sort of a predation by by large vested interests who have a vested interest in keeping and expanding the status quo.
Got it. All right, let me have Anthony comment. Thank you. Role of government, because, boy, I've been hearing a lot of people saying, why are Anthony and these people getting involved with, you know, what I'm putting in my body and what beverages I drink?
Well, I agree with Dave that you know, if you look at, you know, just to speak to what you were saying before about the governor and Shap Smith, last year or recently, they supported a ban on handheld devices while you're driving. And they did that because they were worried about public health and safety. They were worried about accidents on our road and people dying on our road. The sad story is, though, that obesity-related diseases, and we know sugary drinks are part of the obesity epidemic, those are killing more Vermonters. Those are making more Vermont children sick. And those are costing our system far more than, you know, driving with a cell phone. Now, I'm not saying people should drive with the cell phone. I think the governor and the speaker were correct to support that kind of public health, public safety proposal. And I think that they should keep an open mind, particularly with the financial problems that they need to solve with regard to our proposal.
Let's go to Northfield. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, folks. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
I just have a quick comment about you know, these types of taxes in general, and I think while they're completely logical from the science of high fructose corn syrup, I think where the rubber meets the road, what you end up with is a poor tax just based on the demographics of who's consuming these products the most, and you're taking a few more pennies out of some pockets that are already probably hurting to make ends meet in the state of Vermont. I'll listen to your comments off the air. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the concern, but I think when we do this the right way, if we both raising the tax and investing the money wisely, this can actually be a proposal that helps our neighbors most in need. And let's also remember that this is not a tax on a life essential, okay? No one needs liquid sugar to survive. In fact, it's killing us slowly. But, you know, this is a product that you don't have to buy, and so it's an avoidable tax in that way. But the other thing I would say is, if we're investing this money wisely in things that promote wellness, in things that make healthcare more affordable, that's something we haven't talked enough about, but part of our proposal is to use this money to help make Medicaid more sustainable.
You mentioned it a number of times. Let me see if I can grab another call here. Let's go to Eden. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. It just seems to me that it's a no-brainer that something like a 2% tax on a $1 soda is negligible. It would be hardly noticeable, and it would certainly yield significant money to the state budget.
Okay. I think it'd be a little higher than that, but I appreciate your call.
I just wanted to mention, too, on this claim that we're going to hurt poor people. You know, we have some of the governor's hand-picked advisors on poverty issues supporting our proposal. We have Voices for Vermont Children. We have Vermont Low Income Advocacy Council. We have Martha Allen, who is a member of the governor's Poverty Council. Melinda Moulton, who's a member of the governor's Poverty Council. So some of the leading advocates in the state who are concerned about poverty issues have gotten behind our proposal because they know if we get it right, if we invest the money that we raise wisely, and if we help Vermonters at all income levels live healthier lives, then we are going to help deal with the poverty crisis in the state.
Let's go to Waterbury next. Chris, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mark. Good morning to your guests. I applaud your guests' efforts. You just mentioned a minute ago, Mark, about why the government should have any control over what we put in our mouth. Well, I wouldn't have a problem with that other than the fact that they're also wanting to have control on how a lot of this damaging habits are affecting us by implementing a healthcare program. I just had an article put in the paper trying to open not only the public's eyes, but maybe some of our legislative body members, in reference to the fact that we are a lot of our own cause to our healthcare problems. And as far as I'm concerned, until the public is more educated, until they start to become more empowered about taking care of their own health, I can't see this healthcare program going anywhere. And to your guest, I'm curious to know if he were to perhaps look at taxing on a smaller percentage rate a larger range of products, whether or not he might stand a better chance of gaining some ground in the legislative body.
Let me interrupt. Thank you.
You know, I think one of the things, you know, our coalition is aligned behind taxing sugary drinks. They're the largest source of added sugars in the American diet. They are artificially inexpensive because of the subsidies that Congress in Washington gives to the big GMO corn companies and to the soda companies, and that's why we're focused on the sugary drinks. We're going to stay focused on the sugary drinks and use the money, again, to help fund affordable health care programs that already exist and are working.
Where can people find you on the web, Anthony?
Healthiervt.org. I hope they'll go there to find more information.
Anthony Arapino joining us. He is with the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. Thank you for your time. Make sure you grab that bag of coffee. No sugar in that either, okay? Just drink it black.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks to your guests for the great calls.
That's going to wrap things up for hour number one. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk vineyards. We'll be heading down to southern Vermont for that discussion. First, we'll head a little bit even further south with our friends from Washington, D.C. That is how we'll begin hour number two. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, FM 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury and Montpelier.
AV Radio News.